Where's she hiding?
Where are you? What are you doing?
My husband, he needs medicine. Help him.
I was a top priority for the Department of Homeland Security. I came to the United States in search of my American dream, but it turned into a living nightmare. The Department of Homeland Security declared me a domestic terrorist and accused me of being a murderer. I was twice maliciously prosecuted and falsely imprisoned. Millions of taxpayers' dollars were wasted on retaliation against me, my family members, and my witnesses. In reality, I'm a concerned citizen, just like you.
This story has a different message. Yes, you can handle the truth. Liberty doesn't benefit from silence. Freedom doesn't grow in dark places. Patriotism doesn't need to be classified. A tale like this just can't be true. But it is. It will startle you, confound you, test the boundaries of your imagination, assault your belief in the system. It will show you how the money of American taxpayers, your money, is being wasted in the name of national security. It exemplifies unacceptable deterioration of human rights and liberties in our great nation. 9/11 unquestionably changed the priorities of our nation. We've witnessed an explosive growth of the massive anti-terrorism establishment. Did it make us any safer?
Terrorists are continually probing America's borders, looking for opportunities to slip into the country undetected.
Homeland Security Secretary Ridge cites credible threats by al-Qaeda and raises the terror alert level to orange.
San Ysidro Port of Entry, the largest and busiest land border crossing in the U.S., exemplified the difference between reality and propaganda. While Tom Ridge was assuring Americans that our borders were 50% more secure than they were before 9/11, leading San Ysidro port managers were removing x-ray machines, metal detectors, and screening personnel from the border. Instead of improving, our national security was deteriorating. Julia Davis wrote to her elected officials and the heads of the Department of Homeland Security in Washington, D.C. No one listened or responded. Julia's concerns would soon become infinitely more urgent.
Joining us now is a national security and anti-terrorism expert, Julia Davis. Julia, look, it's all great. I'm all for trying to root out any sort of terror.
It's definitely very important to prevent the entry of terrorists into the United States, but we have to keep in mind
that there are already terrorists here.
Evidence discovered by intel sources revealed past and present target dates of monstrous attacks planned for national holidays of July 4th and others, where national security expert Julia Davis reported improperly processed entries of 23 aliens from terrorist countries on 4th of July 2004 to the Federal Bureau of Investigation's Joint Terrorism Task Force. She herself became a target harassment. Doing good is optional, while looking good is what generates more billions in funding and continued opportunities for profiteering by fanning the flames of public fears. Julia Davis was born in Kiev, Ukraine. She was an A student, having learned to read by the age of 3. Julia had mastered classical piano by the age of 10 and excelled in studies of foreign languages. Both of her parents were talented engineers, inspiring Julia to earn a master's degree in aviation and space engineering at the National Technical University of Ukraine.
BJ and I have met in Kiev 17 years ago, when he was doing a film in Kiev, Ukraine, right across from my university there. And I was working in addition to studying, and the first day on the set, our eyes have met, and he smiled at me, I smiled at him, and it was...
BJ Davis is an accredited film producer and director with the Directors Guild of America and Producers Guild of America. Inducted into the Hollywood Stuntman Hall of Fame with two standing world records of over 30 years and having stunt doubled 5 Academy Award winners, Tom Hanks, Jack Nicholson, Tommy Lee Jones, Michael Caine, and Art Carney, BJ prevailed as one of the industry's top stuntmen in the world with spectacular stunts in every venue of action for film and television.
But I had no idea that I would be subjected to what my wife Julie and I were subjected to with a Black Hawk helicopter landing at our property with a 27-man SWAT team to attack us for her making protected disclosures as a federal officer.
BJ and I have been working in Hollywood for many years together. And as a screenwriter, I write outlandish stories that have to be interesting and wild. But I could have never imagined anything so outlandish as what would happen to us in real life.
Tragic events of 9/11 compelled Julia to leave the film industry and serve her country by joining the newly formed Department of Homeland Security. As a staunch patriot, Julia took a course in Farsi and was determined to do her part in fighting the war on terror.
It all started when I went to work for the Department of Homeland Security. Fresh out of border crossing in the United States and in the world, I loved my job and enjoyed it greatly. I quickly advanced and was promoted to become a part of the elite port enforcement team.
Julia Davis was an employee assigned to me in various different areas of the port. And she was a very good employee, qualified, professional, very objective, non-biased, very good with the people.
We were handling cases that involved asylum applications, deferred prosecutions, and most importantly, cases involving applicants for admission from special interest countries, also known as terrorist countries.
A strategy to attack Americans on holidays and anniversaries.
After 9/11, these entries became very important, and we were supposed to be very vigilant in processing people from terrorist countries that are coming into the United States.
The 9/11 world and the immediate aftermath, the theory was, and the reality was, that a terrorist attack, if it were to occur again on U.S. soil, would be someone coming from abroad. I think recent events demonstrate that theory, or that paradigm, has changed, and that there are now individuals in the United States.
Bush was never able to bring justice to the victims of 9/11 or peace back to American soil after spending billions of tax dollars over 8 years with the sacrifice of thousands of U.S. service men and women of our armed forces.
The government has offered very little detail about the number of actual terrorists caught on the border. Government officials have denied terrorists have crossed our open borders, but Channel 2 Action News has proof they have.
The 4th of July was designated in numerous intelligence alerts as a date to watch.
Our port would see on average 10 to 15 people from terrorist countries coming across the U.S.-Mexico border. But on the day in question, 4th of July, 2004, the situation was entirely different. When I came into work, my first order of business was to take the paperwork from the previous shift and input all of those cases into the Department of Homeland Security's database. When I started to go through the paperwork, I was very alarmed when I started to see one right after the other entries of people from terrorist countries. And the number of these submissions was unusually high, in contrast to 10, 15 such entries we would normally see in the whole month's period. There were 23 people that came in a short 10-hour span. I took all of the paperwork in question to our port director to let him know about these suspicious entries. At that point, I thought he must have been already aware, but I wanted to double check. And when I came to the port director and had shown him all the paperwork, this was the first that he had heard of it. He was quite surprised. And I asked him, what do we do about it? Since we had all these intelligence alerts, it seemed highly suspicious. He apparently agreed and told me to take it to Intel.
And I understood these 23 people who should have been interviewed, who should have been posted into the system, were not.
When I went to Intel unit, I was surprised to find a locked door and find out that all of the Intel workers were given a day off on this day of heightened security alert. I was quite shocked by this discovery and rushed back to the port director to tell him that I couldn't take the paperwork to Intel because no one was there. And he told me, just put it in the intake box by the Intel office and they'll get to it when they get to it, which would be next week. Even though I followed his order all day long, I kept thinking and reflecting back on these entries and didn't feel right about just letting this paperwork sit and wait for Intel to get there. Our manual said that if anything suspicious or out of the ordinary happened that could be even remotely related to terrorism, we were supposed to notify the FBI's Joint Terrorism Task Force. When I came home after my shift and I was no longer under port director's orders, acting as a concerned American citizen, I called FBI's Joint Terrorism Task Force in San Diego and told them this information. They were very interested in what I had to say. They took a report and asked me to put everything in writing and fax it to them right away, which I did the same night.
In my opinion, it was an appropriate action. We were told to notify the FBI if anything at all improper had gone on.
I didn't think much more of it. I felt much more at ease at that point, knowing that this would be looked into and investigated. And all I did was follow what we were told to do.
No one knew the sting of a public fiasco like Robert Bonner, who was at the time heading the Bureau of Customs and Border Protection. Bonner's leadership turned deadly in the NASA Challenger disaster. His antics were recounted in a book, Prescription for Disaster, From the Glory of Apollo to the Betrayal of the Shuttle. When an LA Times journalist asked Commissioner Bonner about the Julia Davis report to the FBI, he went into damage control overdrive. Containing a potential PR disaster was his first priority. He scheduled a press conference and started preparing for redirecting reporters' attention away from the 4th of July report to the FBI. Instead, Bonner planned to discuss improvements in border security. At the same time, the rush was on to discredit Julia Davis.
The commissioner had been approached by a Los Angeles Times reporter when he was conducting a badge ceremony in San Diego a couple of weeks ago. And the Los Angeles Times reporter had a copy of a letter Ms. Davis authored, making serious allegations about us not detecting terrorists at the border.
Border sheriffs are fully aware of the terror threats.
There's intelligence that we have that is very troubling, that is not open and available to the public. Americans want to know, especially the threats that exist right here in our own country.
The significance of the Julia Davis case is the fact that this is really the first situation where an individual that was employed by Homeland Security did exactly what they were supposed to do, coupled with going above and beyond the call of duty by letting her higher-ups know that there was a risk that potential dangerous terrorist groups had penetrated our borders. And in response for doing so, she was punished.
And just like that, before I knew it, I became a whistleblower. I never saw myself as one. In my mind, I just did my job, and I did my duty as an American citizen.
Bonner's staff wrote to local port managers asking them to compile a file on Julia Davis. They wanted to know if this exemplary employee with outstanding performance reviews was under investigation for anything whatsoever. They were told that she wasn't. That would change very quickly. In a matter of weeks, Julia Davis was under investigation in not one, not two, not three, but 16 separate cases. This number would eventually grow to a total of 54 known investigations against her. These matters were petty and frivolous, but at the same time designed to provide the agency with an excuse to malign, discredit, and fire an inconvenient truth teller. In response to Julia's report, Commissioner Bonner put together a team to deal with negative media attention and to craft responses that would deter news coverage. Bonner's subordinate, Adele Fasano, admitted under oath that the reason for the rush was to prepare Bonner for the upcoming press conference with the Los Angeles Times reporter. To discuss the Julia Davis report of a national security breach where 23 subjects from terrorist countries had entered the U.S., instead of racing to respond to a security risk, Fasano was ordered to assemble a team. Fasano wrote to her supervisors that Julia should be held accountable for what she had done.
After my report to the FBI, my supervisor, Leonard Rios, was abruptly removed from his post. Instead of him, they brought in a new supervisor, Susan Boutwell.
It was hard for me to believe that after so many years of faithful service and helping create the system and so many different things and being responsible for so many internal bust against our own employees who were corrupt, to find myself being accused of something simply because I defended an employee, that to me is just unfathomable.
On directives from port management and the agency heads in Washington, D.C., Boutwell took it upon herself to harass me in every way possible. Every day I came into work, there was another confrontation. Boutwell even removed the cover sheets from the cases that I was going to process so that I would be unaware that a subject I was about to interview had active tuberculosis.
The standard practice in Homeland Security is to put on each suspect file when they have an infectious disease that they in fact are a carrier of this infectious disease. Several detainees that were intentionally held over 6 hours so that they would be in Julia Davis's shift had the cover removed from their file that indicated that they had TB.
Incident, I ended up contracting TB.
This was an intentional act done by Boutwell for the purposes of unknowingly exposing Julia Davis to this deadly and highly contagious disease.
And I had to undergo almost a year of medications and treatment to overcome that very dangerous illness.
Any other person would be charged with assault with deadly intent or perhaps even attempted murder, but Boutwell was protected.
These efforts were initiated out of the Department of Homeland Security briefings about investigations against Julia Davis for Commissioner Bonner. Bonner's office conveniently arranged to have these investigations handled by Lauren Coffer's husband, Herbert Coffer, and his subordinate Jeffrey Deal. This group of individuals spearheaded the efforts to turn Julia Davis into an enemy of the establishment. Assistant U.S. Attorney from the Southern Federal District of California, Timothy Stutler, advised ICE agents Coffer and Deal in a collaborative effort with Customs Commissioner Robert Bonner. The best way to defend the agency was to have Julia Davis criminally prosecuted and thereby negate her protected disclosures. The Davises were prosecuted in federal court on false immigration charges and in state court on firearm charges. Coffer and Deal depositions were taken and videotaped on November 12th and 13th, 2009 in Los Angeles, California, at the law offices of Girardi and Keyes. Private attorneys were retained to defend co-defendants Coffer and Deal at taxpayer expense in the Davis litigation.
Agents Coffer and Deal lied repeatedly in their depositions and in sworn statements that were submitted before the court.
Herbert, H-E-R-B-E-R-T, Calfer, K-A-U-F-E-R. Yes.
Jeffrey, J-E-F-F-R-E-Y, middle initial J, surname Deal, D-E-A-L.
Do you solemnly swear that the testimony you're about to give in this deposition will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Coffer and Deal were told that all matters involving Julia Davis were to be considered top priority and required immediate attention.
During that examination, did you testify that Agent Coffer instructed you to give your investigation of Julia Davis a top priority?
That was how I interpreted his instructions, yes.
In the years that followed, the government would dedicate millions of dollars in taxpayers' resources and law enforcement manpower towards discrediting Julia Davis.
Julia has three cases Homeland Security has filed against her. The last case was filed for being a, quote, a threat to national security, end quote. They consider her to be a domestic terrorist for the aggravation and false claims in her lawsuits and press releases.
Did you ever tell Mr. Boyd that Julia Davis is a domestic terrorist?
I don't know.
Did I view her as a threat to national security?
Or anybody in your agency?
Objection, Foundation.
Officer.
Hope abroad.
I never called her a domestic terrorist.
CPVI Davis appears to continue to accuse managers for perceived wrongs, and her presence in the workplace would constitute a serious breach to security.
Okay. My copy says could constitute a serious breach.
Oh, sorry. You're right. Could. Do you know anything about that statement? Why would she have been a serious breach to security?
I didn't write the letter, so I can't speak to state of...
You are from a reporting. First, что-то террорист товарищ, или что происходит? Он ответил, что Джулия Дэвис is domestic terrorist.
I later found out that they declared me to be a domestic terrorist, and therefore they felt that under the Patriot Act, they could do whatever they wanted and break any law in existence to conduct warrantless surveillance, sneak and peek incursions, following us by vehicles. They went so far as to even use OnStar to track our vehicles, monitoring our communications, wiretapping us, reading our email, doing anything and everything imaginable to follow our every move.
These actions were without any legal jurisdiction or warrant for the searches and surveillance, contrary to President Bush's statements about needing court orders.
I do believe they have been keeping close tabs on Julia and BJ via wiretap/internet reading and the various other ways the Patriot Act works.
It raises questions in my mind about whether individual government officials in the future could be held liable for having acted in a criminal way.
You and some other people conducted aerial surveillance of the Davis house, correct?
Yes.
And it says photographs were taken, and I assume the Mercedes and the Cadillac Escalade were observed. Is that correct?
Yes.
All right. Do you know who took the photographs on this date?
I did.
Okay, you took them. And what kind of helicopter were you using on this day?
I don't believe it was a helicopter.
It was a plane?
Yes.
Like a single engine kind of thing?
Yes.
And where were you flying out of?
The San Diego Air Branch, which is located on the Coronado Naval Station, Naval Air Station.
Coffer and Deal pre-planned for weeks in advance with Customs Air and Marine Supervisor Marcus Custer, based at the Naval Air Station on Coronado, California. Details of the Davis residence in Yucca Valley, California, had been obtained via sneak and peek burglaries executed under the Patriot Act. Coffer and Deal fragmented the law when chasing Julia Davis to deny, discredit, and destroy her as part of their daily regimen maintained in years of daily diaries revealed in
evidence that was vital and requested from Julia Davis's attorney.
This contemptuous conduct was in violation of the federal rules of civil procedure, and technically, if taken issue with by the judge, Coffer could have been held in contempt and engaging in this conduct. Judge Rosalind Silver, to her credit, did not wish to have any portion of this lawsuit sealed and felt it was best that it be maintained as a public record. And as of today and continuing on, it still remains in the public record.
During one of the interviews having to do with these investigations, I was interviewed by Agent Deal for 8 hours. I think even investigations having to do with murder sometimes don't take this much time during a first interview.
You've reported a number of things. I mean, you're very good at writing memos and letters complaining about situations and protesting a lack of policy and so, aren't you?
Yes, and policies are a lot of times created based on those memos.
ICE agent Jeffrey Deal kept repeating to me that I'm very good with complaining about lack of procedures at the port, and I knew right away what this all had to do with.
One of the 54 investigations that were opened against Julia Davis in retaliation for her report to the FBI involved her cell phone being broken by Supervisor Susan Boutwell.
I could see the writing was on the wall at that point. Everything was already set in place to discredit me, and it didn't matter which way they did that. All of the investigations against me were completely petty. For example, it included an investigation into whether or not my cell phone was broken when the supervisor hurled my bag to the floor. Another investigation had to do with how I spent my unpaid leave. This was obviously merely a pretext for attacking me in any and every way they could come up with.
Well, I'm going to judge you when this investigation's over, and people above me are going to judge you. But yet you told me it's all on videotape. It shouldn't surprise you that Boutwell denies it. She even says, well, I didn't do it.
It was my assessment of what happened. And for your own conclusion, I suggested that you see the tape.
I've seen the tape many a time.
Going back to the videotape, that videotape showed the purse being put on the ground. Is that essentially what you were looking at?
I mean, I have to clear Susan Boutwell's name. I mean, she has I have to interview her over all this, too.
Does this memo refresh your recollection that Ms. Boutwell initially asserted that she had never touched Ms. Davis's bag?
I mean, the memo says what it says. If you want, I'll read it.
Susan C. Boutwell.
I guess it would certainly be fair to say, it would be your statement under oath, that you never at any time on that day or picked up a backpack.
Never. Absolutely never.
In a one-armed motion.
Absolutely never.
Threw it to the ground, right. On that.
I'd have to, again, see the statement or, for it's the exact contents of her statement.
I haven't seen the tape. You want me to see it? Yeah.
Okay, what we'll do is 9:34, we'll stop the tape for the sole purpose of reviewing the tape. If, in fact, you had known it to be Officer Davis's...
I wouldn't have touched it with a 10-foot pole without witnesses.
You have the camera anyway.
I didn't even think about camera.
But
after she looks at the video, all of a sudden she did touch the bag, but then claims she didn't know it was Davis's bag. And yet at the same time, she describes it as an unusual bag. Didn't you think that Ms. Boutwell had a credibility issue at that point?
No.
No, you didn't think she'd lied in the memo, Exhibit 104?
No.
Really? There was no need to investigate her at all?
I was investigating her.
Well, what about the fact that she had...
In my opinion, as a lawyer of 13 years, the perjury that was committed by Boutwell and Deal, if our justice system was to work the way it was supposed to, would subject them to consecutive prison sentence adding up to 150 years.
Coffer and Deal baselessly concluded that Julia Davis was a threat to security and must be removed from duty.
At that point, working at the port became impossible. The situation was completely untenable. I resigned involuntarily. What was done to me was blatantly wrong. And as soon as I involuntarily resigned, I filed a case against the Department of Homeland Security for subjecting me to such a treatment that made it impossible for me to keep working and had no authority to continue chasing me after I left my employment. From depositions in Watergate Hotel in Washington, D.C., to the very date of the hearing in San Diego.
This is the Westin Hotel where Julie and I stayed during her EEOC hearing, where Chief Judge Daniel Leach ruled that the agency acted illegally towards Julia.
Exactly this type of harassment.
The manager for the Westin Hotel actually let Coffrin Deal enter our room, execute a warrantless illegal search.
All right, did you obtain...
Other than it was, a bit of a boring surveillance.
Coffrin Deal actually solicited the San Diego Police Department to illegally detain and stop Julia Davis and I on the day of her EEOC hearing so she would be late and miss the hearing. Coffrin Deal, in his diaries, they state specifically the days that they'll stop us, the place and time.
We engaged in visual surveillance in conjunction with other agents in our office division.
There was a couple of traffic officers on motorcycles. You were doing surveillance. Did they pull over the Davises?
I believe they did.
San Diego police officer Steve Webb stated that he conspired with Coffrin Deal for weeks in advance to stop Julia Davis the morning of her EEOC hearing at 7:30 a.m.
Why were you guys still involved? Isn't that outside of your jurisdiction?
Check to the form of the question.
Yeah, that was our focus, was to investigate allegations of criminal activity or serious administrative misconduct by our employees.
It's clear that at that time in October 2004, the Davises were not working for the U.S. government, correct?
Involved Department of Homeland Security's false claim that I was working on a film with my husband, B.J. Davis, at the same time that I was working for the Department of Homeland Security. This was a blatant lie, but to corroborate Department of Homeland Security's allegations against me. We spoke to Brittany about these false allegations, and she confirmed that she never made such a statement to Susan Boutwell or anyone else. Through her attorneys, Brittany issued a statement to confirm that Department of Homeland Security's allegations were a complete fabrication.
Homeland Security was up to its old tactics, the same tactics that they used towards the Davises, in putting Brittany Murphy and her family through the terror that they put the Davises through.
Byway 97, what's the address of the emergency?
1895 Rising Glen Road.
Tell me exactly what happened.
Oh, my daughter's passed out. She's doing mouth to mouth. Please get her friend,
okay. Okay. Somebody. All right, we're going to. How old is your daughter?
She's 30. Please help.
She's 30. Okay, she's with you now?
Yes, there's someone coming.
Yeah, ma'am, you don't have to yell. We're going to send somebody out there, okay? Is she awake?
Please, no.
Is she breathing?
No.
This is the residence of the late film and television star Brittany Murphy. Brittany lived here with her husband Simon Monjack. On December 20th, 2009, Brittany was raced to Cedars-Sinai Hospital, where she was pronounced dead at 10 a.m.
I'm Brittany Murphy's father, Angelo Bertolotti. It breaks my heart. She should still be here now. She was young and vibrant. There was nothing natural about Brittany's death at all. My daughter Brittany became involved in a Julia Davis case. She was dragged into it by Susan Boutwell. Botwell made serious misrepresentations as what Brittany supposedly told her about BJ and Julia Davis. Brittany stood up for Julia and issued a statement through her attorneys. In this statement, Brittany confirmed that she didn't discuss Julia or BJ Davis with Susan Botwell.
Susan Botwell, when approached to be interviewed, immediately resigned and indicated her intent to move out of state, which shows her complicity in this major governmental scandal against Julia Davis.
As a result of speaking out in our support, Brittany and her family also became subjected to terror tactics by the Department of Homeland Security. They also subjected Brittany and Simon to surveillance, including surveillance by helicopters.
I got a call from Brittany one morning about 4 o'clock in the morning, our time. She was in New York making a movie, and she said she was being followed by 2 men, and she didn't know who they were. She called me because she was afraid. She was very saddened and frightened by these things such as Happy Feet and Tinkerbell. I knew that Brittany's fears were real because I myself was followed.
Brittany Murphy and Simon Monjack confided in Alex Ben Blimes were picked up by the tabloids. Rumors started spiraling that Brittany and Simon were insane or using drugs.
She actually said, "I think I'm going to die." But then Brittany said that a lot. She was fairly dramatic. She was a bit of a drama queen, and so while they took it seriously, that was Brittany.
Mr. Block, the editor of The Hollywood Reporter, had a meeting with the Davises. During this meeting with the Davises, Mr. Block admitted that he had audio tapes of his interviews with Simon Monjack, where Simon Monjack then informed Mr. Block that he'd been followed by the government and was being wiretapped.
For whatever his reasons were, was very paranoid and passed his paranoia on to her and isolated her from close family and friends who had been part of her life for all the years until she met Simon. And so he became the master of the domain.
Additionally, in an article that was published in The Hollywood Reporter, he made defamatory statements directed towards Julia Davis, stating that she was a quote-unquote rogue agent.
Below, you can see our home there, just north of Buena Vista Drive. We're on the southern side of Buena Vista, where from a mountain high point, the agents parked and kept us under surveillance for 2 years with as many as 8 agents without a warrant or any legal jurisdiction to do so. We were under fixed wing and Black Hawk helicopter surveillance as well. Ultimately, this is tragic considering the fact that Katrina victims were drowning at the same time that Julia Davis had her own Black Hawk helicopter assigned to her.
All day, every day, they were taking notes. They were following me. They had a total of 7 agents. On some days, it was as many as 7 or 8 agents following us in vehicles. I don't know what they were trying to see since we were not doing anything that was illegal. So this was obviously a twofold attack. Not only did they want to harass us, since this was a pretty blatant and obvious surveillance, but also they were probably hoping that we would report this surveillance to the authorities, and then they could say, look at the Davises, they must be insane. They think they're being followed. And in fact, had we reported it at that point to anyone outside of our attorneys, which were the only people that were told about this at that point, no one would have believed it.
This is the facility that Herbert Coffer and Jeffrey Deal used to house themselves and other agents in the execution of 2 years of warrantless surveillance of Julie and I in Yucca Valley, which is approximately 20 minutes to the north. You have to bear in mind, they were coming, they drove, they flew, came from San Diego, which is approximately a three-hour drive. And during that time, they were on eight-hour workdays, but they also charged overtime, per diem, and lodging. They all stayed here.
Well, is that a proper use of government funds?
It's an objection. It's a cause for an improper legal conclusion. Lack of foundation.
I'll bite the land attorney's recommendation. Well, they're not instructing you not to answer.
You know the answer.
I think it's been deemed an appropriate use of taxpayer dollars.
Coffer and Deal led the preparation for the helicopter raid weeks before the Davises were indicted on August 9th, 2005.
Do you have any idea?
Navy SEALs spent 40 minutes in their operation to get bin Laden, while Customs and Border Protection with ICE and U.S. Marshals spent 1 hour and 40 minutes in a warrantless search at the home of former federal officer Julia Davis.
The agents of the Department of Homeland Security, Herbert Coffer and Jeffrey Deal.
These rogue agents use taxpayer dollars in order to protect their own interests so that they can maintain their elite status. Eight agents at 2 years of surveillance, you figure for anything, they're all making $150,000 a year. It's quite an expenditure.
The fact is this, unless you have adequate oversight, people will stray, and the very purpose for what you're using that authority for will be abused. Would John Doe, the taxpayer, paying for my activities, want me to be doing what I'm doing? Would he want his hard-earned money to go what I'm doing?
So, was it your idea to get the SRT team involved?
Yes.
August 10, 2005, Department of Homeland Security landed a Black Hawk helicopter at our home and stormed it with a 27-agent special response team. We weren't at home, but my parents were. They had absolutely no idea what was going on. They were both thrown to the ground, handcuffed, and separated.
At that time, my son, my grandson, and my daughter-in-law, we were in my computer room on the computer laughing and talking. And suddenly this gigantic wave of sand and wind was coming through the window, and suddenly we saw this helicopter flying right past our window, and we slammed the window shut and got on the floor. There was no way that it was going to make it anywhere but to the ground. That's why I thought at first it was actually going to crash. But we just felt pure terror.
This operation was completely lawless. The agents didn't even obtain the permission from the...
Fathom, the Black Hawk helicopters they sent out to replace in Palm Springs. I don't realize, believe anybody really realized that was going to happen.
Yeah, I would consider use of a Black Hawk helicopter to go speak to a federal agent excessive force and actually a ridiculous scenario.
What kind of helicopter was it?
I believe it was a Black Hawk helicopter.
This one seemed a little low. My son came running into the house and said, Dad, come here. Rather large. And it was flying very low. And it came and landed down in Cola's front yard. The immediate thought that ran through my head, and it was only instantaneously, was, oh my God, is there a terrorist? And watched them, and they had arms in their hands.
The agents didn't have a search warrant. They didn't show my parents any paperwork. They laughed and scoffed at them as they kept them handcuffed while they were ransacking the house.
The Davis's pet Biscuit was brutally kicked by ICE agents during the raid. Biscuit fell ill and died prematurely.
Лазили там в ящик, где лежал телефон, перевернули все в ящике, медикаменты читают, все читают, фотографируют. Фотограф выдвигал все ящики при нас. Коля говорит, ну я себе такого представить не мог. Какое-то сумасшествие. Им нужно, говорит, все в ящиках фотографии на любое лекарство и на все. Это же вообще непонятно, чем взрослые люди занимаются. они, когда он им опять начал подзывать этого Кофферда или Дила, и где ордер?
If any of the members of the team had searched through small containers or in spaces that couldn't possibly contain a human being, that would have been improper, correct?
Calls for a legal opinion.
But it would be my opinion that would be improper.
Have you ever seen the pictures that he took?
I have.
Wasn't there pictures of the medicine cabinet?
Yes, there were.
Do you know why he took a photo of that?
I don't know.
And where in the bathroom did you observe the male toiletries?
Just in the, you know, the vanity in the bathroom.
Oh, in the cabinet?
Yes.
The chateau of Auxerre. British chateau was that. Yeah, well, you have to unlock. Department of Homeland Security.
My dad was dragged away from the house, and he kept asking the agents what was happening. And the only response they would give him was to say that Julia Davis is a domestic terrorist.
Я их предупредил, что у меня больное сердце, и что я нуждаюсь в медицинской помощи. Они только засмеялись и оставили меня. Значит, через...
Я лежала и кричала, help me, help me, my husband, heart, показывала уже, когда позже я кричала, my husband, heart, 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 heart is bad, чтобы ему оказали помощь, потому что я поняла, что если тут со мной такое делают, и там с ним такое делают.
Mrs. Kowalska was on the, you know, on the, laying on the floor. There was an agent standing next to her, but she was just on the ground, handcuffed.
During the raid of the house, the agents dragged my father out in full sun, handcuffed, wearing only his boxer shorts, in full desert sun.
This is the T section of Balsa Avenue and Sierra Vista Drive, just south of Buena Vista Drive in Yucca Valley, California. This is where the San Bernardino County Fire Department and paramedics stayed in a waiting position while the Black Hawk helicopter team made their assault on our home. They were dismissed early per the San Bernardino County Sheriff Department radio logs after McCullough Cott, Julia's father, had suffered a heart attack and was denied medical attention.
And when my dad asked for his heart medication and water, they left at him. He told the agents he was having a heart attack, and they just laughed at him.
Я им говорю, что старший, что руководит операцией, Дил.
So where was Mr. Code situated when you first saw him?
He was near the near that secondary entry point.
Do you know if Mr. Cote had any problems with his heart during the operation on August 10, 2005?
I only learned sometime afterwards that he requested medication.
He was sitting in the dirt.
You know, I don't know if he was sitting on the step or sitting on the ground. I just don't recall it.
I did not personally observe him getting any medication.
They surrounded the house, and the next thing I saw was that they had brought Cola out. I could see that his arms were put together and obviously held by something, but he was not moving. When they and they kind of pushed him down to sit down, and yes, there were a couple of them that stayed right with him so that he could not move in any direction. He appeared bent over, and I wondered how he was doing with what action was going on. And in the meantime, the helicopter came over to our house. It circled around our house, and I, oh my God, what's next? Are they gonna land their helicopter in my yard? But they kept circling around above our house, but at a higher altitude than what they had come in at Cola's house. And it kept circling. It didn't fly away and then come back. It just kept circling and circling, and of course, the noise is rather profound. And then they went back over to the front yard of Cola's house, and from near as I could determine, the men all reboarded the aircraft, and they took off.
It was something that you would see in another country and not happening here in our home.
The SRT team, and particularly Herbert Coffer and Jeffrey Deal, denied Mercola medical attention, access to his medicine when in the house itself, and they laughed at him and scoffed at him as a result of that being denied medical attention and being illegally detained in violation of his constitutional rights. He suffered irreparable heart damage.
Doctors later confirmed that my dad did have a heart attack that day. This damaged his health to such a point that he didn't live much longer after that. The doctors couldn't save him.
McCollicott was and is the most wonderful person and most wonderful neighbor there ever was.
I still am sad when I hear of his passing, and if there's ever a man that will remain in my memory, perhaps as long as I live, it will be Cola, because Cola was one of a kind and very, very fine gentleman.
Nothing that the Department of Homeland Security ever did to me was as bad as what they did to my father. They knew him to be a heart patient because, as we later found out, before the raid of our home, they've already pulled my parents' A files. They knew my father had a heart condition, and they had pre-planned their attack in such a way to make sure that he would have a heart attack.
Coffer and Deal, acting on directives from Bonner's Washington, D.C. office, pre-planned the attack with the SRT team and the Air and Marine Unit in association with Marcus Custer. Their pre-planning include map questing and Googling our residents as well as local hospitals. Since they never intended to provide McCollicott medical attention, the only reason for Coffer and Deal to map quest local hospitals would be to take our lifeless bodies there after the raid.
If it wasn't for our neighbor, Matthew Judd, we would probably not even be believed when we told anyone that Department of Homeland Security landed a Black Hawk helicopter in our residential area.
Matthew Judd lived in this home, and I had known him since he was a little boy. He grew up with my youngest son. He had filmed the video, and he told me about it. He just was asked.
He was kind of apprehensive, maybe a little scared. On the film that I looked at in through his camera, it was he was shaking. I mean, if he wasn't holding the camera steady.
Saw that there was people coming out with guns, and that's when he decided he needs to start filming to document what was going on in our neighborhood.
Matthew was very hesitant in coming forward and telling anyone that he had this tape. But he knew it was the right thing to do, and he finally came and told us that he had filmed the raid. Matthew even wrote a sworn statement to confirm that he videotaped the raid and that he saw agents taking out boxes from our house that they denied taking. He was very much in fear of what would happen to him if the agents knew that their actions on that date were videotaped. He was right to be afraid. Only weeks after he gave us the tape, Matthew Judd was found dead in his home.
At the age of 25, he died under mysterious circumstances. To this day, His death certificate still says that cause of death is pending.
Nothing was removed from the house.
Did you observe any of the team members carrying documents or boxes out of the house?
No, I did not.
Anything else seized from the house?
Nothing.
Any boxes?
No.
They were taking boxes that looked like shipping boxes. Like I said, our houses are not that close, but I did see them taking things from the back.
We're at the Raleigh Studios here in Hollywood, California. We had offices here under my company, Beverly Hills Film Studios. Coffer and Deal, representing the Department of Homeland Security, entered the facility and illegally seized our personal belongings, files, medical items, intellectual properties, film footage, without any warrant. And to date, they are in contempt of a court order to return those items taken at our studio and at our residence.
Commissioner Bonner's influence was far-reaching, from Washington, D.C. to San Diego, California. He sent Coffer, Deal, and many other government employees to the Davis's entertainment unions, such as the Screen Actors Guild, Directors Guild, and Producers Guild of America. Bonner utilized his connections to curtail any media coverage of the matters pertaining to BJ and Julia Davis. According to the arrangements made by the heads of the Department of Homeland Security, the agency's head of public relations, Dean Boyd, would respond to media inquiries by openly referring to Julia Davis as a domestic terrorist to their Facebook account and eliminated their unauthorized access. Facebook accounts of BJ and Julia Davis and Anthony Schaefer were simultaneously shut down on the same day.
But the reality is the Department of Homeland Security is supposed to be defending us against another attack from Islamic terrorism. That's the reason this department was created. And yet, it appears to be the gang that can't shoot straight. And also, to me, it's missing its purpose.
Deborah Wong Yang approved the malicious prosecutions of the Davises in support of Bonner's retaliatory vendetta against them.
Deborah Wong Yang, Robert Bonner, and A. Howard Matz have formed a very dangerous trifecta as it relates to the Davises. Mr. Bonner, justice is maintained and justice is received for all defendants, have conspired together in order to quash justice in the case of the Davises and who knows who else.
Deborah Wong, Gibson, Dunn, and Crutcher boast close ties to the media, having represented NBC, CBS, Fox, and Paramount, as well as the social media giant Facebook. Federal prosecutions are discretionary and selective. This allows the system to be used as a tool for silencing concerned citizens while real crimes go unpunished.
I would say that based on additional information that developed the shift of the investigation focused on the citizenship fraud.
Normally, denaturalization is done to war criminals, and in this scenario, it was such an obvious overkill that federal judges presiding over our case had to note that the measures taken against me were extreme in this case.
From what I understand, the reason they did it is because they said that she was entered a marriage for the purpose of interest of immigrating. Anybody who knows Julia and Beau would know that that's the furthest thing in the world. So why would we expend so much money to send out Black Hawk helicopters when you can just knock on the door?
Immigration and Customs Enforcement Internal Affairs was utilizing their offices and U.S. embassies in Frankfurt, Germany, and Kiev, Ukraine, to discredit Julia Davis.
The purpose of that was to verify the authenticity of a marriage certificate, and that would be the undeveloped lead that's cited in the page 2 of this report.
Okay. Was this the marriage certificate from Kiev regarding BJ and Julia Davis?
I believe it was, yes.
Okay. What was the result of that investigation?
The Frankfurt investigation revealed that it was a valid document.
Funny enough, Department of Homeland Security fully investigated our marriage before hiring me, and as did other federal agencies that I applied to for employment.
So there was no question as to the credibility
or the vetting of her as a top security clearance federal officer.
Well, I think I've referred to it as citizenship fraud. Citizenship fraud. Have you ever done that before? No, I had not. What about, you know, if Agent Coffer did?
Objection, Foundation.
I don't believe he had either. Are you aware of any other operations where people were arrested for citizenship fraud using a SRT team and a helicopter?
Object to the form of question, Lex Foundation.
I'm not aware of any situation.
Coffer and Dio's division, Immigration Customs Enforcement, found a way to retaliate against Brittany Murphy now.
On March 27, 2007, Simon Monjak was arrested by Immigration and Customs Enforcement. Millions of visa overstays account for about 50% of illegal immigrants in the U.S. What made Simon Monjak top priority for ICE was not his immigration status, but his fiancée's involvement in the Julia Davis case. San Diego-based ICE spokeswoman said that Simon Monjak was accused of overstaying his visa and could be deported. She was from the same San Diego.
Brittany had to pay a large sum of money to the Department of Homeland Security to have Simon released. She also knew that agents were coming into her house and conducting sneak and peek incursions.
With their surveillance and monitoring them, wiretapping their house, it was par for the course of what the Davises endured and their multiple years of terror that they went through in this situation. It was the same department, and both Brittany and her husband, who incidentally was jailed for 9 days.
The San Diego office of ICE is the same office that attacked Brittany, Simon, Julia, and BJ.
Brittany Murphy and Simon Monjak knew they were being targeted. Simon complained of being severely abused while in custody of ICE. Nobody listened to their pleas for help. As the Hollywood Reporter recounted Brittany's and Simon's interviews about being wiretapped and followed by helicopters, the truth was much stranger than fiction.
The latest Hollywood mystery, the husband of actress Brittany Murphy has been found dead just 5 months after her own passing.
Some would say that Simon Monjak was best known simply for being married to Brittany Murphy. Now he has followed her into death in an eerily similar way.
It was also highly suspicious that Simon died under the same circumstances.
What I find extremely odd and suspicious is the fact that Deborah Wong Yang, who was the U.S. attorney for our jurisdiction, first prosecuted the Davises. And then when Brittany Murphy spoke out in support of Julia Davis, upon her passing, when Brittany Murphy passed in the latter part of 2009, specifically in December, Ms. Wong Yang at that time was mysteriously police commissioner. And according to the coroner, Ed Winters, there wasn't full protocol followed in the inquest in regards to Brittany Murphy's mysterious death, or that of the death of her husband 5 months later in the same house under the same circumstances by apparently the same causes as Brittany Murphy did. Again, protocol in the coroner's office was not followed, and at that point, at the time of his untimely and unfortunate death, Deborah Wong Yang is police commissioner of the LAPD.
Mr. Monjak was found unresponsive. Paramedics responded to the house. He was pronounced at 2145 hours. His death is under investigation by the Los Angeles County Department of Coroner with the assistance of LAPD.
Can you describe the crime scene, though?
It's not listed as a crime scene. He was found in the master bedroom. And like I said, it is under investigation. Okay.
Los Angeles County Chief Coroner Craig Harvey on camera stated that his office only sees approximately one-third of the deceased in Los Angeles County, averaging 70,000 per year.
When you only see one in every three cases, the possibility that a homicide's going to be missed are pretty great.
He asserted there were homicides he was not aware of and individuals getting away with murder.
The situation concerning Brittany and Simon Monjak dying of the same thing exactly is, in my viewpoint, impossible to happen. I don't believe that Brittany and Simon's case was properly investigated. The LAPD homicide detectives opened and closed Brittany's case in less than an hour. They didn't do a test on the hair and other things concerning Brittany's body. It's an injustice here, we all know that. As far as I'm concerned, all agencies should be investigated in this case. Governor spent millions of dollars in investigating and attacking Brittany and Julia.
And under identical and suspicious circumstances, what would Brittany Murphy and Simon Majak have said today?
In this scorched earth campaign against Julia Davis, of which her and her husband were eventually found factually innocent, the government went so far as to accuse her of committing murder at the age of two. Later on, Judge Larson, that presided over the case, said that he was shocked and surprised as to what the government was not denying.
Coffer and Deal solicited San Bernardino District Attorney Rick Young, a former police officer, to prosecute us on a second contrived and false charge after the federal charges were dismissed.
On February 19, 2006, the San Bernardino County Sheriff's Department, under Sheriff Coroner Gary Penrod, arrested BJ and I under directives of Herbert Coffer, Jeffrey Deal, James Wong, Deborah Wong Yang, acting on orders from Robert Bonner. I was falsely accused of having committed a murder in 1974 when I was 2 years old. San Bernardino County Sheriff Department didn't use a Black Hawk helicopter or a SWAT team to arrest us. Instead, they sent two deputies who had no trouble finding a front door and ringing the bell, unlike the Department of Homeland Security.
U.S. Attorney John Lee stated emphatically that Julia and B.J. Davis should never have been prosecuted. Customs Commissioner Robert Bonner allowed Julia Davis to be charged as a two-year-old and felon after she had been thoroughly investigated and vetted by federal law enforcement agencies. Robert Bonner left Customs and Border Protection to take a seat on the Department of Homeland Security Council, where he could continue to impact Homeland Security contracts. As a partner in the law firm of Gibson, Dunn & Crutcher, Bonner was joined by Deborah Wong Yang, who left her post as the U.S. attorney to work for the firm along with Bonner. Bonner targeted Julia and BJ with his protege, Deborah Wong Yang, to indict and prosecute them both.
Bonner didn't stop there. He enlisted the aid of his colleague, Judge A. Howard Matz.
In regards to Judge Howard Matz, there's been several years of abuse as it relates to Julia and BJ Davis. First, as being the judge assigned to their criminal persecution, followed by allowing himself to sit and preside over a civil action that involved them, and finally, in his violation of the canon of judicial ethics and in the laws that pertains to contempt, and placing B.J. Davis in jail in the general population, well in excess of his enumerated powers as a federal sitting judge.
We're here in Beverly Hills, California at the Beverly Hilton Hotel. This is where I met Commissioner Robert Bonner of the Customs and Border Protection in 2008 during the John McCain fundraiser. Mr. Bonner told me at that time his friend A. Howard Matz would be taking care of Julie and I, and that it wasn't over until it's over. Bonner also vetted and spoke for A. Howard Matz's appointment.
And most of us frequently don't have hearings.
Judge Howard Matz threatened me on one occasion to put me in jail based on a case involving homeowners, but in reality, it was thinly veiled because of my representation of Julia Davis and P.J. Davis.
Matz is infamous for his unconstitutional rulings, and he also authored a textbook for prosecutors on how to negate and void people's civil rights and to bury actions of police brutality and misconduct.
Coffer and Deal essentially destroyed Julia Davis's potential and promising career with the FBI. The day she was supposed to show up for FBI training, they then communicated with the FBI several untrue things to ensure that she would never fulfill her dream of becoming a special agent. with the FBI.
So you became aware that...
Verification into an FBI investigation of Julia and her application to the Bureau. Coffer and Deal represented themselves to FBI Special Agent as Julia's supervisor and prejudiced her employment by stating she was a rogue officer under investigation. Clearly, these material misrepresentation biased Julia's employment opportunities.
And did you represent to Agent Hunter that you were Julia Davis's supervisor?
No, I would have never been her supervisor, so, and I'm sure we did not represent ourselves as such.
So you're certain that neither you nor Agent Coffer told Agent Hunter that you were Davis's supervisor?
I'm pretty confident about that, yes.
Julia and BJ self-surrendered as armed and dangerous fugitives to U.S. Marshals on August 16, 2005, after being falsely indicted on August 9, 2005.
This is the Roy Ball Courthouse and the Metropolitan Detention Center.
Julia and I had to self-surrender here rather than be carried away in chains. And on that same day, Julia received her letter from the FBI in Phase 3 hiring to report to Quantico, Virginia as a special agent for the FBI.
U.S. attorneys asked the federal court to hold Julia and BJ without bond after their self-surrender. Julia and BJ were placed in the general prison population both times they were arrested, and this placed Julia in a life and death situation as a former federal officer. Judge Matz was aware that BJ Davis was an informant with the FBI against the leading five families of New York, the Bonanno Mafia family, who pillaged his company, its stocks, and projects. Knowing that nine perpetrators were convicted and imprisoned for these crimes, Judge Matz still wanted B.J. Davis to give up his rights to his own film. When Davis refused, Matz had him imprisoned for a third time for civil contempt. Matz continued to place his friendship with Bonner above his ethical and moral obligations as a sitting federal judge. BJ and Julia presented the FBI and Department of Justice U.S. Attorney Deborah Wong Yang with audio tapes of Bonanno threatening to kill BJ if he did not give his 50% of the film company, 50% of the movie, forget about it, and 10% of BJ's earnings in perpetuity.
Bill, I just can't meet everybody's demands.
Bill, I apologize, you know that. When I say the people, those people, Bob. It's only going to hurt yourself. And you're going to wind up in a battle with me.
Did you ever come to learn that there were certain members of the mafia, the Bonanno family, that injected themselves into the Beverly Hills Film Studios operations and conducted fraudulent stock sales? Did you ever learn about that?
Lacks foundation. Overbroad. I believe I heard that, yes.
Police message. Hi, this message is from BJ Davis. BJ Davis is Arnie Medrano with the FBI.
Los Angeles-based FBI agents Arnie Medrano and Ray Pateski attempted to falsify cases against the Davises to assist their comrade Herbert Coffer, while the Phoenix office of the FBI is where senior supervisor agents John Quinn and Sherry McAllister used the Davises to entrap Salvatore Bill Bonanno for robbing their company.
The egregious conduct that Coffer and Deal engaged in cannot be overstated. They disclosed confidential information regarding their investigation of Julia Davis and her husband, B.J. Davis, to known mafia figures. Additionally, they abstained and made arrangements to abstain from prosecuting these known mob figures, who then, in the interim, went and looted the couple's film company.
Coffer and Deal stopped the FBI from protecting Julia as a federal officer threatened by organized crime members.
But I was aware of the FBI investigation.
All right. Did you tell Kimberly Cates that there was an FBI investigation in Arizona investigating her in Beverly Hills Film Studios?
Ask for an answer. I don't recall. I mean, again, I was aware of the investigation. if it was discussed, it may have been discussed.
Coffer and Deal traveled to Las Vegas, Nevada to meet with members of the Bonanno crime family at the Rio Hotel. They've concluded that the best place to conduct meetings with mobsters would be at the Voodoo Lounge, as Coffer's notes later revealed in Discovery.
And what was the purpose of that meeting?
It was more of a social get-together. I don't know a first name, but Eichelberry was the name. Another person by the name of Zappone.
Herbert P. Coffer met with a female representative of the Bonanno Group an estimated 17 times, traveling back and forth to Los Angeles area, documented on audio and video. Herbert Coffer stopped SEC investigators David J. Van Havermat and Michael Giuliano from registering BJ and Julia's protected disclosures about stock crimes. Julia and BJ were attacked from both sides of the badge.
In the latter part of December, specifically of 2007, they filed an action against the Bonanno crime family and named Salvador Bonanno as one of the defendants. This related to a massive penny stock scam that Bonanno was involved in, wherein he used the Davis's company essentially to facilitate this scam, bilking investors out of $52 million. After filing the lawsuit, Salvador Bonanno died the very next day on January 1st, 2008.
Members of the Bonanno crime family have pillaged the Wells Fargo bank accounts of B.J. Davis and Beverly Hills Film Studios checking in excess of $1.2 million by forging B.J. Davis's signature.
I think she mentioned to me that B.J. Davis accused her of forging his signature.
ICE agent Herbert Coffer provided 17 exemplars of B.J. Davis's signature to the members of the Bonanno crime family, aiding and abetting them in the commission of a crime.
And this is your agency's fax cover sheet, right?
Yes.
Okay. And it indicates that attached are signature exemplars for Mr. Davis. Best regards. And is that your signature?
Yes.
Once the Davises reported these crimes to Wells Fargo Bank, LAPD, FBI, SEC, and the IRS, agents Coffer and Deal actively influenced these investigations, improperly causing them to be stopped. Throughout this case, the Department of Homeland Security failed to investigate any of the reports made by Julia Davis, electing to investigate her instead.
Matthew Isman, who was Robert Bonner's right hand while Robert Bonner was running Customs, helped ramp up the malicious investigation of Julia Davis from the Homeland Security side. After the Davises were cleared, he then used his connections from his Department of Treasury days in order to get the IRS to start looking closely at the Davises' finances, and with the hopes of running another malicious prosecution from the Department of Treasury IRS side.
The IRS continues to attempt to tax BJ and Julia Davis for the money stolen from them by the mob. During the course of discovery, the government released the daily diaries of Coffer and Deal that detailed their daily efforts to harass and prosecute the Davises. The personal notes, the DEA, the ATF, the FBI, and even the IRS.
This is the law firm of one of our attorneys, Michael Proctor, the law firm of Caldwell, Leslie, Proctor, and Petit. They have filed a motion to dismiss that was over 4.5 inches thick, and the U.S. attorney representing the government said it landed on his desk with a thud. Had shown that there was no evidence whatsoever as to the allegations brought against us by the Department of Homeland Security. It also outlined gross government misconduct in the handling of our case.
Coffer and Deal also said in the course of discovery represented by the U.S. attorneys that no witnesses were paid against us. However, the discovery revealed they did in fact pay witnesses to give false testimony against us. So that really slammed their case very hard as well. There's no foundation to prosecute us to begin with.
Their civil litigation was placed in the Central Federal District Court, Eastern Division of California, and assigned to former federal judge Stephen Larson. Larson stated he was amazed at what the government was not denying in the Davis case. The government didn't deny conducting warrantless searches, wiretaps, email monitoring, fixed wing and helicopter surveillance, and attacks for years with taxpayer dollars.
What I did to protect the nation.
and I would do it again.
Perhaps the most damning commentary was issued in the court order by federal judge Virginia Phillips, who ruled as follows on January 28, 2010. On August 10, 2005, 10 DHS Internal Affairs agents, a United States Marshal, SRT members, 8 unmarked cars, and a Black Hawk helicopter arrived at the Davis' residence in Yucca Valley to execute warrants for the Davis' arrests. Plaintiffs BJ and Julia Davis have produced significant evidence about the 2005 raid and search of their residence. This evidence is sufficient to create a factual question as to whether federal agents committed an abuse of process when they conducted that search pursuant to the arrest warrant. In light of the substantial evidence presented by plaintiffs as to the magnitude of the search and the government's failure to identify undisputed facts in support of a contrary finding, the court holds that a reasonable fact finder could find the extreme nature of the search and raid of the Davis's Yucca Valley home was not proper in the regular conduct of the proceedings. The sum total of these facts is sufficient to allow a fact finder to infer a retaliatory or malicious motive in the execution of the search. Plaintiffs have therefore produced sufficient evidence to allow a reasonable fact finder to conclude the August 2005 search was an abuse of process. Once all criminal charges against the Davises were dismissed, the court ordered they were found factually innocent, and the court mandated the return of all items taken during 2 warrantless searches of the Davises' residence and offices.
Julia Davis's case is unprecedented. It's a case of incredible magnitude, and I believe it'll be studied in law schools 100 years from now.
Bonnard Matz, Coffer Deal, Iceman Wong, and Wong Yang repeatedly violated federal statutes. USC 18, in targeting Julia, left America at risk and committed felonies under the color of law. The magnitude, manpower, and government resources thrown at Julia is still being tabulated in the millions of tax dollars to determine the actual cost by the Department of Homeland Security retaliatory response per Bonner's directives via the Bush White House.
So we're looking at a time in American history where the national security establishment after 9/11 has gotten extraordinary powers of surveillance under the Patriot Act, that they've taken us to wars, and at the same time, they've been hammering whistleblowers in an aggressive campaign that is unprecedented in terms of the prosecutions we see. And I was actually unaware of some of what BJ and Julia lived through, and it's remarkable that you were able to end up on your feet.
America, it would not be the home of the free if it were not the land of the brave. Right now, those labeled whistleblowers are precariously at risk. But this applies to every U.S. citizen that stands on constitutional entitlements.
Brave individuals who choose to fight against government corruption in courts aren't commonly perceived as heroes, but they should be. Those are the brave few fighting for the rights of many. The Department of Homeland Security spent all of the financial resources and military might of the United States to cover up their national security breach of July 4, 2004. Was this another 9/11 assault on the American people in the making? How many deaths will it take before these matters are properly and thoroughly investigated? Whatever happened to the 23 subjects from the special interest countries with ties to terrorism that were allowed into the U.S. during a heightened security alert? What event was interrupted for the report being closed with no action necessary by CBP Commissioner Robert Bonner's office? Would this security breach have cost the Bush administration the 2004 election? Would these revelations have impacted the Department of Homeland Security's multi-billion dollar anti-terror funding? BJ and Julia Davis fought for the benefit of all American citizens, striving to ensure that nothing like this ever happens to you. Our constitutional rights and freedoms are safeguarded not on the battlefield, but in a court of law. Regardless of the consequences, we owe it to ourselves and to the future generations to uphold the Constitution. We must hold our government to the high standards set by our founding fathers. Absolute power corrupts absolutely. Unless Americans speak out against corruption, injustice, and corrosion of constitutional rights and liberties, what is the government's top priority? Protecting us from terrorism or suppressing our civil rights and liberties? should we be more concerned about external threats or the terror that lies within?
Location. Confirm visual. Thank you.
You've got no right to come into my home.